So we are going to continue the discussion on fault tolerance. Today we will talk about distributed commit, two-phase commit, three-phase commit, consensus, agreement, and PACS. Okay, they're all related topics. We'll start with the one item that was left over from last time on atomic multicast. We'll wrap that up and then we'll talk about consensus, agreement, commits, and so on. So you remember last time we were talking about losing packets in the context of multicast, and I discussed a NAC or negative acknowledgement based scheme so that you can tell the sender whenever you do not have a packet that was sent. Okay. Another way to think about multicast is what is referred to as atomic multicast. This is a stronger property, which says that whenever a sender sends a message, either everyone receives it or no one receives it. Just as you have a transactional mechanism where it's all or nothing, you can also think of every send as being all or nothing. Okay. So an atomic multicast is a guarantee that all processes receive the message or none at all. It is used, for instance, in a replicated database where you have a query, you send the query to all the replicas. For consistency, you want to ensure that either the query is received by all the replicas, so they all execute the queries and have the same state, or none of them. Okay, you don't want a scenario where some of them have executed it and have put the database into another state and some other replicas have not. So it is used in a variety of scenarios like this. And then the main issue here is what happens when some processes crash. How do you deal with what the group of processes that is alive is, and how do you ensure that, the packets are then delivered and so on. Okay. So the way this problem has been approached in the research literature as well as in some systems is this notion of a group view. Okay. A group view is basically a group of processes that are currently known to be, or replicas that are currently known to be up, and everyone agrees that that is the group that is currently functioning. Okay? And so long as the no processes, there are no faults, this group is no, membership is going to remain static. Okay? When one node or more nodes fail, then what you need to do is any process, any messages that are in transit, you cannot deliver because some processes have received it and others have crashed. So you hold that back. You get the remaining processes to agree on what is the new group. Okay. You basically, once they all agree that, okay, now this is the new group of replicas that is up because some process crashed, then you get that agreement and then you again restart multicast. Now it's all the multicast guarantees are going to be for the new group that has been formed. Yeah. Eventually, maybe a failed process may come back up. At that point, the group view may change again. Okay. So at any point, for the protocol to work well, when you say all or nothing, you need to know what all means. Yeah. Because the all itself may change. The all meaning all the members in the group may itself change in the presence of processes. If you say all is the all of the processes that you began with and some processes have crashed, no further messages can be sent, because some process has disappeared, and by all or nothing guarantee cannot be given, it has to be nothing from that point on. So to ensure that you can continue to deliver messages, the definition of all is basically the current group of processes that are up, and you want agreement, you want everyone to agree that that is the group that the messages need to be delivered to. Okay. So this is how atomic multicast is typically implemented, or not implemented, is sort of protocols are designed for. So every message is uniquely associated with the group of processes. Okay? And so long as the group membership doesn't change, you want to ensure that all of the processes receive it. When they all receive it, then you know that you actually met the atomic multicast guarantee. If some process crashes when the message is being sent, the group view changes. At that point, the message cannot be delivered to the old group. That has to be nothing because you are not delivered it to some. And you rerun this protocol to decide what is the new group, find the new group view, and then you deliver. Okay, so that's a picture that is shown here. So initially there are four processes, P1, P2, P3, P4. The group is the entire set, and here is a multicast message that's being sent, that's delivered to everyone. Here's another one that is being sent. Okay, now when the third a message is being, so P3 is sending a message, let's say it crashes in the middle. So maybe the message has been sent to two of the three or so one of the three, but not all. Okay? So at that point, the group membership has to change. So that message cannot be delivered. So you're going to change the group membership. Okay? And then ensure that the messages, all subsequent messages are only sent to the new group. Okay? That message is discarded. You basically say it's the nothing part, not the all part. And then subsequently, P3 may rejoin as another group, new chain, and so on. Okay? So the problem of atomic multicast has been reduced to the problem of defining which processes are up and having all of the processes agree on what is the group to which a message should be delivered so that the all property of the atomicity is met. Okay? That's the way to keep in mind. Now, there may be other techniques you have to ensure for the all part, which is if the network drops messages, what do you do? How do you retransmit? That is not part of this protocol of detecting group view changes. Okay? That is dealt with separately. You can just use TCP, for instance. TCP will do the retransmissions for you. So you can have TCP connections from every process to every other process. So you just send on a TCP connection and the network will deliver it for you. So we have not talked about the issue of what happens when packets are dropped and so on. This is simply saying if you want to guarantee this all or nothing, you have to at least agree on what we mean by all and then what happens when processes fail and so on.
Who manages group membership?
Who manages group membership? That's a good question, right? So that is basically the heart of this protocol is how do you decide what is in the group? That's a distributed protocol. Now, there are many techniques to do this. In fact, when we talk about PAXers in a little bit, that's a way to actually determine group membership in a distributed way. Okay, here is another system called ISIS that is actually mentioned in the book that talks about a protocol to manage group membership. So basically, what happens is, this is basically done, through leader election or through any other protocol where if some process detects that some other process has failed, so 4 detects that 7 has failed, it is going to basically send a view change message to everyone saying some processes disappeared, we need to find a new group. Yeah. At this point, first thing that other processes do is they will flush what are referred to as unstable messages, which are messages that 7 may have sent partially, for instance, so that you can send that to the new group and so on. Okay? You determine the new group and then you can basically redeliver the message. So there is a system called ISIS that implements atomic multicast primitive. It's a middleware system. Okay, it implements this, so you can use that to implement higher level applications that may need atomic multicast, such as, let's say, replicated database. Okay. But the important question that was asked was this whole notion of how group membership is actually maintained. Okay. PAXers is one way to do it. There's a very simple protocol that was designed described in the book that simply says that I'll detect a failure, I will notify everyone that a node has failed, we'll all agree on the new group, and then we will take any messages that were unsent and then redeliver it to the new group. So that's what the system called ISIS does. It's called virtual synchrony. Okay. I won't go into the details there. We are going to talk about PAXOS in a little bit. That gives a more general solution to this problem. Any questions on this? Atomic multicast. So this is what was left over last time. So what we will now talk about is this notion of a distributed commit. So this generalizes from the atomic multicast problem. So in atomic multicast, okay, we basically said either all processes receive a multicast message or none of them receive it at all. Okay, this is part of a more general problem where all processes in a group perform an operation or no one performs the operation. In the multicast, the operation was the delivery of a message. Okay, but everybody has to agree. So now we are going to look at another operation, which is whether to commit a transaction or not. And so this is going to bring us to the problem of a distributed commit. Okay, so think of a scenario where you have a replicated database. You sent a query to all the replicas. Okay, all the replicas have executed that transaction. Okay, that's part of the query. At the end of this, they have to agree on should we all commit or should we not commit. If any process decides to, any replica decides to roll back or abort the transaction, everybody should abort. If everybody agrees to commit, then everybody should commit. So you should agree on what the result of that operation was. And the operation here is a distributed transaction. It could be any other operation. In Paxos, we don't even define what the operation is. We want to get some agreement. Okay? So all of this, we will now look at this whole notion of agreement where everyone has to agree on something. Okay, here we are going to agree on whether to commit a transaction or not. Okay? And we look at two-phase commit and three-phase commit in the context of this operation, which is whether to commit a transaction. But it could be agreement for any operation you want to perform. So this is basically going to give us atomicity, which is all or nothing. Either everybody does it or nobody does. You don't want a scenario where some processes do it and other processes don't do it. Okay? We will start with this classical protocol called 2PC or two-phase commit. It was proposed back in the 70s, as a matter of fact, by Jim Gray. And it's widely used in database systems, distributed database systems. Not that widely used because it has some problem, but it was widely understood. And then there's a generalization of it called three-phase commit that overcomes some of the problems. Okay? So we'll see how this works. Okay, so going back to this is the same question that was asked, saying how do you decide how to get agreement? Okay? So in the case of two-phase commit, we are going to simply use voting to get agreement. Okay? So we will basically assume that there is going to be a coordinator. Okay, coordinator is going to run the voting process. How do you elect the coordinator? Leader election. We won't worry about how coordinator is elected. Let's say the N processes that want to now decide whether to commit a transaction or abort it are going to elect a coordinator. And the coordinator is basically going to run a voting process. And basically, this is a state transition diagram of how it works. But very simply, it's shown in this picture. So you basically broadcast a message to all the replicas saying, what do you want to do? You want to abort or commit? Everyone gives their reply saying, I want to commit, I want to abort. You collect all the responses. If everyone says commit, you commit. If anyone says abort, then you tell everyone to abort. Okay? Very straightforward process. So you ask everyone, collect the replies, and use that to decide. Okay? Now it sounds trivial, but you have to do it in a way that will ensure what is called safety, which is bad things should not happen if some process crashes or the coordinator crashes. That's really the crux of the problem. Otherwise, the problem is trivial. If there are no crashes, I mean, the problem is really nothing. You just ask everyone, collect the responses and deliver the result. Okay? The issue arises because there could be a coordinator crash or some process may crash and you don't want to do unsafe things, which is some processes decide to do something and the other process will do something. Then you don't get the all or nothing. You'll violate that. So here is basically what is happening at the coordinator. So there are four different states the coordinator could be in. There's an init state. Okay, that's the initial state. This is a state where you actually send out a request saying, send me your vote on whether to commit or not. Okay? And then you go into a wait state, waiting for the replies to come back from all of the replicas. Okay. Here's what the replicas do. Okay. Replicas are also in init state. Okay. When they receive a vote request saying send me your vote, they can give one of two replies saying I vote to abort or I vote to commit, depending on what happened to the transaction locally. Okay. If you vote to abort, then you can basically go to an abort state because you know that that's a veto. If you say I abort, then you know that the coordinator is now going to be forced to abort the transaction. There's nothing else that can happen. Okay? So then you basically go directly into the abort state and you are done at this point as far as this node is concerned. Okay? Now on the other hand, if you want to commit, you cannot commit yet because you don't know what other replicas have said. Some of them may have said abort. So even though you think you should commit, if somebody else says abort, you will be asked to abort later. So you have to wait for the results of the voting to be completed before you know what to actually do. So you have voted to commit. So you are going to go into a ready state, saying, I'm ready to commit. Tell me, is it okay to go ahead or should I abort because somebody else said abort? Okay. So then you are in the ready state here after the first phase where you sent your vote, if you voted to commit. If you voted to abort, then you know what the result of the voting process will be, so you can directly go to it. Okay, now the coordinator is waiting for all the responses to come back. If all the responses come positive, which means commit, it is going to basically broadcast a global commit, saying everyone said commit, go ahead and commit. So it sends those messages. If anyone vote is for an abort, it's going to send a global abort message saying go ahead and abort. Okay? So for any node that is in the ready, if you get a global commit, you send an acknowledgement and you commit. If you get a global award, you send an acknowledgement and award. Okay? This is what two-phase commit does. Straightforward technique. Okay? Now, there is a lot of this sounds very straightforward, but there's some subtlety in here which is proving that this protocol will always guarantee you all or nothing, no matter who crashes at what point. Okay, so if nobody has crashed, this should actually always give you the right thing. Okay? But the analysis gets complicated because any process can crash at any point in time during the voting process and bad things should not happen. Okay? So for instance, if the coordinator crashes, okay, so if the coordinator is gone, anywhere in between, the nodes shouldn't actually, some nodes shouldn't go into abort and some nodes shouldn't go into commit. Okay, so that's you have to prove that. I mean, it's not, you have to, so how do you, so you have to now look at how the protocol works and argue it out. So let's say the coordinator crashed after the first phase when the votes have been delivered, but before the response of the election has been, not election, the vote has been actually announced. Okay? So what could have happened? Any node could have voted for a commit or an abort. If all nodes voted for a commit, they will all be in the ready state. Okay, nobody has done anything yet. They're still waiting and they will hang until the coordinator comes back. So safety is not going to be violated. Safety means nothing bad happens. Okay? So you'll all be hung in the ready state waiting for the results. Okay? You cannot commit. Okay, there is no liveness until the coordinator comes. You can't make progress. Liveness means making progress. Okay, there's no liveness, but at least nothing bad has happened. Okay, you are in the ready state. Now let's say some nodes voted abort, other nodes voted commit. Okay. In this case, some nodes will be stuck at ready and other nodes would have gone into an abort state and they would be sitting in abort. Okay. So even here, you can argue that safety is not violated because only some of the nodes have aborted, others are waiting for ready. Okay. Then when eventually, hopefully, the coordinator will recover or a new coordinator will be chosen. And at that point, these nodes will be told that somebody has voted abort and they will be asked to abort. So you have not gotten a state where you've gone into a commit and someone else is aborted. That is bad. Okay? So if all of them voted abort and coordinated, they just made a transition. Again, nothing bad has happened. They're all in the same state. Okay? So this is how you have to actually analyze. So that was a coordinator crash. And we said what happens when the coordinator crashed for different scenarios. Same thing may be true if some of the node fails after it has voted, say. Okay. So, if the node fails before it voted, then the coordinator does not get some of the responses. It can basically either wait for the node to recover, which is right, or it can say that the result may be to abort. You can't tell them to commit. Even if the remaining n minus 1 say commit, if some node has failed without voting, you can't tell them to commit because if that has decided to abort, you are in trouble. Okay. So, either you wait for the nodes to recover, or you can basically ask them to abort because that's okay, even if that node said commit later on, everybody goes into abort because that's fine. Okay. So this is how you have to analyze this technique. I won't go into every possible scenario, what happens if the node fails at this state, at this state, this state, this state. So you have to analyze it and make sure that no matter what state you are in before a node crashes, nothing bad can happen from the protocol's perspective. Okay, bad meaning some nodes commit and other nodes abort the transaction, then you did not get your all or nothing property. Okay? Everyone has to be in one of two states or everyone should be hung waiting for a decision. Okay? Can't make a decision. Right? All of those are okay. Okay. What's not okay, some go into the abort and yes.
So what if some nodes commit and some still in the ready state and then crashes?
Okay, that's a good point. So every possible scenario can occur. So the scenario being raised here is some nodes, so this is phase two, the coordinator has gotten all of the results and it's about to announce the messages. Okay, so it is basically, let's say the decision was everybody decided to commit. Okay, so in that case, let's say it sent the global commit saying the result is to commit to the first three processes. Okay, they went, they received it and they committed, but before it could send to the remaining coordinator crashed. Okay. So the rest are going to be still in ready state. Okay. So they are hung there. allowed to talk to one another, they can say what was the result of the voting. If any node heard the result of the vote from the coordinator before the coordinator crashed, you know what the result is. You will not hear a different result later on. So you can use that. Now typically nodes may not be allowed to talk to one another, they can only talk to the coordinator, in which case some would have committed, but others will be hung and ready, waiting for the coordinator to come back. At which point they can check what the result was, and the coordinator would then tell them the result and they will go ahead. So at most you will be hung in the ready state, not making progress, while other nodes have made some progress. That's the worst that can actually happen. What you cannot do is say, coordinator crashed, I'm not getting any response, I'm going to time out and abort. That would be bad, because the coordinator said commit and made somebody commit and you timed out and did abort. That was going to be a problem. So you shouldn't do that. Okay, but the protocol doesn't do that. You basically have to wait to hear. Okay?
But the coordinator will always continue, because these nodes will always send an acknowledgement after the commit has occurred.
Yes, the coordinator will know what has happened because there's an acknowledgement going back. Okay, so if there are no crashes, everything is fine. The issue is what happens in the midst of sending the final response, in the midst of asking for what each node wants to vote on, etc. So I think you have to analyze all the scenarios. I already discuss what happened in 4 or 5 different cases. So if you can go and analyze it, you will see that you can always you'll either be hung or you'll be in a safe state, okay, which means everybody is in the right state. So here is some pseudocode that's taken from the book. I won't go into all of the detail. It shows you how to implement two-phase commit. So here is where you multicast a vote request, okay, and then you get all the responses, okay, and participants basically. If everybody said commit, okay, then you are going to send a global commit. If anyone says abort, then you send a global abort. Okay? And remember that you always write the results of the vote to DIST before you send any reply. The reason for this is if you crashed after you made a decision and that decision was stored in memory, after you recover, you don't know what happened. Okay? So because this is a transactional system, you always actually write out what you did to a log on disk before you send. That way, if you crash, you can recover and then what was the response? I just look at a disk. So the assumption is if you crash, your stable storage is still stable. It's not that the crash, if there's a fire and the disk evaporates, you can't do anything. That's not the problem we're trying to solve. You just assume that it's a software crash, that you will reboot, but your data is still safe. Okay? All right, so that's the coordinator. Here are the participants. A very straightforward, simple code that just follows the state transition diagram. You are in the init state, you wait for the vote request, okay, and then basically if you decide to commit, you are going to send the vote to the coordinator and wait for the decision. Okay, and then if you decide to, and if the decision is to do a global commit comes back, then you again do the global commit. If the decision comes back abort, you do abort. Okay? Always write to the local log as well. Okay. And this is basically, so that's the way this technique works. Okay, the subtlety, as I said, is to argue what happens for a particular crash scenario and convince yourself bad things won't happen. Okay, so I have already mentioned all this. Okay. So now the big issue with two-phase commit is if the coordinator crashes, in most cases you cannot make progress because you will be in the ready state waiting for the results of the commit or some such thing. Okay. So three-phase commit, okay, so it tries to deal with some of these issues. So how do you deal with a coordinator crash where the process is blocked? Can you make some progress based on what may have happened? Okay. So then what this protocol has is a simple generalization. It adds a third phase. Okay. We have a voting phase and then you send the replies of the voting phase to everyone. You will add a third phase here as follows. Okay, this is the coordinator. This is a node that is participating in the voting phase. Again, the coordinator is in the init. It asks everyone, send me what you want to do. Okay, this is a vote. And it goes into wait state, waiting for all the replies to come. Okay. Here is a node. So it will initially get a request to vote. Okay. Again, if it votes to abort, you make a direct transition to abort. You're done. Okay, because you have decided that's a veto, like before. Nothing has to be done. But on the other hand, if you vote to commit, okay, you are basically going to go to a ready state and wait. to wait for the result to come back. Now the coordinator is going to wait for all the replies. If any of the replies say abort, you are going to send a global abort like before. This part is unchanged. And then you make everyone abort. Now on the other hand, if everyone decides to commit, you basically say prepare to commit and you go into a pre-commit state. So you announce the results of the election and say be prepared to commit but don't commit yet. Okay, this is why it's called a pre-commit state. So again here if the results are announced to abort, you will transition to abort state. But if you get a prepare commit, you will go into a pre-commit state. Okay. And then you send an acknowledgement saying I am ready. Okay. Once you get an acknowledgement from everyone saying I announced the results of the election, I asked everyone to commit. Okay, then you say go ahead and commit. That's now you say ready to commit. Okay, at that point everyone will commit. Okay. So you added one extra step to committing, saying you, if the global vote was to commit, you told everyone to commit, got an acknowledgement, and then said, now go ahead and commit. Okay. That's a three-phase commit. Okay, now the question is, why does this help in dealing with coordinator crashes? Can tech processes make some progress if the coordinator crashes somewhere in between? Because in the previous case, we said you may be hung in the ready state, for instance. You cannot make progress until you know what the vote is.
So if the preparation for a commit is a substantial task, they can do that. So I assume that's the only...
Because point being made, the preparation for a commit is substantial, you can go ahead and do that. But how does it help if the coordinator crashes? How does the protocol have any better property if the coordinator crashes? This question.
Well, before, right, we were stuck in the ready state and we didn't know whether or not we're going to commit. Yeah. But now, if they're in the pre-commit state, when the processor crashes, they know they can commit.
Yes. So here is the point being made is if... So you can again look at different say scenarios. So first of all, if the coordinator crashes before, during the initial vote gathering phase itself, if nobody hears the result of the election, you can at most be in the init, ready or abort state. Because if you did not even get the request, you're stuck in init state. If you agree to go commit, you're here. If you agree to abort, you're here. So in all of those three scenarios, it's okay to get a timeout after a while and decide to abort, because nobody would have actually committed at this point in time. At most, they would be in pre-commit. Okay, because if you have made any progress from ready state, you will at most move here. You will never actually go to commit. So you can have timeout and abort. On the other hand, if the results of the elections were announced and the decision was made to commit, you are actually going to be, at least some of the nodes may be in pre-commit state or they will be in ready state. At that point, they can decide what to do based on, if everyone is in ready state, you can decide to wait or you can decide to abort, and that's still safe because nobody has gone to commit. If at least one node says you're in a pre-commit state, you can actually infer the results of the election and decide to go to pre-commit. Okay. So because you have this extra step, you can actually see what the results of the election could have been and make a decision accordingly. You don't have to block. In the previous case, you don't know what is safe to do. If everybody is in ready, you have no idea what is the right strategy. Okay. So it has some better properties for coordinator crashes. If you have network partition, then some nodes go down or nodes are not reachable, that's a different problem. So this is three-phase commit. It basically, again, in a transactional system, it allows you to figure out how to deal with some of these problems. Okay, so what I will now talk about is a generalization of all of these approaches that allow you to make progress even in the presence of arbitrary faulty processes, network partitions, and so on. Okay? Two-phase commit and three-phase commit are techniques to get some agreement. In this case, the agreement was whether to commit or not commit, but you could have made any other decision. Yes, vote for something, whether it's commit or some other thing, doesn't matter. The problem was you may actually have safety property, which is bad, things don't happen, but you may not be able to make progress in certain scenarios. Okay. We will now look at this whole problem more broadly by looking at this notion of what are called consensus protocol. Okay. Consensus protocols are protocols that try to get agreement among a group of processes. Two-phase commit and three-phase commit were also examples of consensus protocol, but the processes could not be faulty in arbitrary ways for you to have liveness. The process failed somewhere, you could basically have safety, which is bad things will not happen. But then you may be stuck forever waiting to make progress. Okay? The more broader class of consensus protocol tries to achieve reliability even in the presence of faulty protocol. You want to make some progress even if coordinator crashes or some node fails, so long as there is majority, you should be able to make progress. Okay, that's the basic idea. Okay, not that everybody is not unanimity, but majority. In that case, you are trying to shoot for unanimity. Okay, here, if you can actually get majority and make progress, you can then ensure that bad things will not happen, is the basic idea of consensus protocol. Okay. And what you are trying to agree on depends on, we already saw how to commit a transaction. Electing a leader, you can agree on that. You can also use this for locking. Okay? What you are agreeing on is who gets the lock or the state of the lock. Okay? That you can use these kinds of protocols also to implement locking protocols. In fact, I will put up a paper on the reading list that uses Paxos or consensus protocols to do distributed locks. Okay, we have seen distributed locking before in this class. This is going to be based on Paxos, more sophisticated version. Now, here are some properties that any general consensus protocol may try to achieve. Okay, first property is the reason you are trying to do this, you want to get agreement, which is every correct process agrees on the same value. Okay. It doesn't say every process agrees on the same value, which is different. Every correct process, it means the process is up and running correctly. Okay, every correct process agrees on the same value. Termination says every correct process decides on some value. Okay, termination is a liveness property. Okay, which means that the protocol will actually produce some result in the end. You won't be hung waiting forever for something to happen. Okay? So this says that you are going to agree on the same value. This says you are going to agree on some value eventually, which means you will not be hung forever. Okay, validity says if you propose some value, then all correct processes decide that value, okay, meaning you won't pick something invalid. And integrity says you pick a value that somebody has proposed. You can't just arbitrarily decide out of a hat, this is what we should do. Whatever you pick, somebody should have actually agreed or voted or proposed. Okay. So that's basically the broad class of properties you want a consensus protocol to provide. These are the most important. You want to agree and you want to terminate. You don't want to hang forever and you want to actually get agreement from majority. Okay. So, as I said, two-phase commit and three-phase commits are examples of consensus, but in the presence of failures, they will not provide some or more of those four properties. They do get agreement, but you may not terminate. You may just hang forever at the coordinator phase. So they will not give you some of those properties. Okay? So Paxos is a more general version of some of these ideas on consensus, which says how do you deal with consensus in the presence of failures of nodes. Okay, so nodes can fail, coordinators can change midstream, yet you want to be able to reach a network can get partitioned, so some nodes just disappear, not reachable, yet you want to be able to get this agreement. Okay, that is what it is designed for. Okay. So you can think of it as if you have Paxos, you can use Paxos to also do distributed commit. Okay, because it's a more general protocol that tries to deal with failures in a better way. Any questions so far? Consensus, agreement, and Paxos. So Paxos is an example of a consensus protocol. Okay, it tries to give us some of those properties. Okay. So we'll go through this protocol, try to understand it. It's somewhat subtle, but I think the basic protocol is not very difficult to understand. So first of all, the basic idea is you want to get a set of nodes or a set of replicas to agree on the same value despite failures, network failures, and delays. Delays means it's arbitrarily slow. Okay? And basically, what is it that you are trying to agree on? The agreement could be, you want to elect a new leader, you want to agree on what is the last operation that was performed, you want to agree on whether to commit or abort, you want to agree on whether a lock is available, who holds the lock. What you're trying to agree on is independent from the Paxos protocol. Paxos protocol is simply saying it's a voting-based protocol that tries to get everyone to agree on something. Okay? Depending on what problem you're trying to solve, what you agree on will be different. Okay? That is not part of Paxos. That is how an application that uses Paxos is trying to get the agreement on something. So we will use it in an abstract way, saying you agree on a value V. Okay, what that value is, whether it's to commit, whether it's to who holds the lock, is independent. You won't worry about that.
Okay.
Here is basically a very high-level idea of how it works. Okay, one or more nodes will be a leader here. Okay, leaders are also called proposer nodes. Okay. Leader will propose a value, saying, I think we should all agree on something. And it will propose this value to all of the nodes. Okay. And it will solicit, do you accept or not? Okay, so it's basically going to ask the nodes to vote. Here's a value that I believe we should all agree on. Do you agree or not? Okay? And then based on what responses come back, it's going to announce. Okay? The nodes may decide that they don't agree to that value. Nodes may decide, okay, I agree to that value. How that is done, I'll show you. But you will basically collect the responses and you will provide the result. In that sense, it's similar to two-phase commit. There are phases. You basically ask everyone to vote and then get the responses. And if there is disagreement, then you will not... You will say this is a, we cannot agree, and you will restart. If there is agreement, then you will tell everyone this is what we all agree on. Okay. Similar idea. So it's a voting based process. Okay. And we'll go into the details of how these three steps are performed. Okay. Just as an aside, it's one of these important protocols, again proposed by Leslie Lamport, independently proposed by Barbara Liskov. Okay. And more importantly, this is the protocol that is actually widely used in real systems, whether it's systems that Google has built or Microsoft or any large distributed systems that you see. Okay? They are based on Paxos, because two-phase commit, two, three-phase commit, they all have issues in the presence of failure. In Paxos, there is always a way to make progress, okay, even in the presence of failure. So this is what is used. So now we will talk a little bit about the requirements, and then we'll look at the operation. So we want the following properties. I presented the agreement termination properties. Here they are in a little more detail. So first we'll call safety properties. Okay, remember, safety always means nothing bad happens. Okay, that means all nodes have to agree on the same value. Okay, this is again all or nothing. Okay, once you agree on the same value. You can't have a disagreement. Okay. And the second safety property is the value that you agree on was proposed by some node. You can't agree out of the hat some arbitrary value that nobody cares about. Okay, otherwise you would have a very trivial protocol. You always agree on zero. Okay, regardless of what happened. That's a trivial solution. You always agree on null because I hard-coded the value and math is done. So for safety, you want to also ensure that for correctness that the value you are agreeing is somebody, a value that somebody cared about. It's a response to some request that somebody computed or some such thing. Okay, so that's what you want to agree. Okay, liveness basically says the following. If less than half the nodes fail, okay, meaning you have a majority, you should still be able to reach agreement. Okay, if you have a majority, you should be able to make progress. Okay, that's what it says. If you are a minority, you shouldn't be able to make progress. That's, well, you cannot actually deal with that. But if you have a majority, you should be able to. Now also, the liveness property has a caveat which says if you have steady stream of failures while the protocol is running, you will not be able to reach agreement. In the midst of the voting, if some node disappears, you have to restart. Okay, that's what will happen. Then again, when you restart again, another node fails, you will have to restart. So if you have this thing happening all the time, you will not be able to terminate. But if nodes fail, you have a majority, and while the protocol runs, there are no more failures, you will reach agreement. Okay, while the protocol is running, at least the node shouldn't keep failing. They should at least be. Okay, before it's ran, it's okay for nodes to fail. Okay. Any of these things can happen. Network can get partitioned. Leader can fail during soliciting the replies during or before announcing results. Okay. A new leader may show up, okay, and it may propose a different value from the already decided value. Okay. Yet you shouldn't be able to have bad things happen. Because we'll see that you can arbitrarily decide the old leader has gone down, I decide to be the new leader and take over. This leader had actually decided a value and told some nodes you shouldn't have bad things up. And we'll see how all of these things will be dealt with. Okay. Are the requirements clear before we talk about solutions? Okay. So here is how it's going to work. So we'll have three entities here. Okay. A proposer, which will be also called a leader. There's an acceptor and there's a learner. For now, let's not worry about the learner. That only comes at the very end. Okay. The acceptors are the ones who vote. Okay. The proposer or the leader is the one who's going to propose. This is like the coordinator. Okay. It is going to basically say, let's agree to something. Okay. And acceptors are the voters. They are going to vote what to do. And then the leader will decide based on the vote what should actually be done. So that's basically, so the leader is going to propose values and solicit acceptance from acceptors. Acceptors will basically either agree or not agree. And then if everybody agrees, then you are going to announce that to the learner nodes. Learner nodes are the nodes that need to be told the outcome of the election. Okay, the learner nodes could be the same as the acceptor. Okay? Or they could be different, because you may say the acceptor nodes are the ones doing the computation. The learner nodes are the ones that need to be told the output of that computation. They may be the ones that made the request. Okay. Or they may, it may be the same node that needs to be told, okay, go ahead and commit or not commit. So in that case, the learner may be the same as the acceptor. But the protocol differentiates between them, because there is, you can, some scenarios, they may be different sets of things. Okay. Now, here is the way it's going to work. So every proposal, or think of it as a election, you can also think of it as a voting cycle, will have a proposal number. Okay, we'll have an ID, integer number. Okay. You can, proposer can pick an arbitrarily high number in order to get its proposed value to be accepted. Okay, the basic idea is you always try to look at the highest proposed ID and try to look at what to do with that value. So you can pick whatever value, you meaning the leader, can pick whatever value it wants, and so long as it's higher than all previous elections, that's the one that the nodes will care about. If it's lower, then the nodes will discard. Okay, so any ID can be picked and it has to be unique. And they have to be clearly increasing. Okay. An acceptor can accept multiple proposals. Okay. And if you accept multiple proposals, once you have chosen a value, we will see that all subsequent proposals will actually end up with the same value. This is why you eventually reach agreement. And here is the implementation of it. So here is what every node has to maintain. Okay, it has to maintain a proposal ID, which is N of A, and a value that was proposed along with that proposal so far. Okay. And you are also track the highest proposal ID you have seen so far across the system. And as far as the leader is concerned, you basically keep track of what is your current proposal ID that you have proposed to. Okay. And we'll see how these variables work. So this is. So now again, it's a three-phase protocol. Yeah, the first phase is the prepare phase. This is where you prepare everyone to vote. Any node can agree to be a leader. Okay. And then if you decide to be a leader, you are going to pick a proposal ID that is greater than what you have seen so far yourself. Okay. If you've seen a higher ID proposal, other nodes are going to reject it. So you see, what have you seen so far from the previous leader? Pick an ID that's greater than. And then you say, send a vote request, which is a prepare request to all the nodes. You basically say, let's vote. You tell me what, so initially you solicit. Okay, you don't propose a value, you solicit a value. Okay. Now, an acceptor node, which is a voter node, once it receives a prepare message, first, so what you are going to get is a prepare message with a proposal ID in there. Okay, that has been sent to you by the voter. First, you check, is this proposal ID greater than something I've already seen? If it is less, you say reject. I've already seen a higher proposal from someone else, so I'm not even going to bother with this. Now, if this proposal ID is higher than anything you've seen, you first reset your ID. So you say, this is the most recent and highest proposal ID I've seen. Okay. And then you send a prepare OK, and then you basically send the previous highest proposal ID you had seen and the value that you saw with that proposal ID. Okay. If some other leader had already sent your proposal ID and a value, you send that proposal ID and a value. The value can be null if you haven't seen any proposal so far. Okay. So you can say, the first time somebody asks you what should we pick, you can say null, I don't know. Okay? If you have already heard some other leader propose a value, say, here is what I've seen so far. This is the value that was proposed to me the most recently. Okay? So you send that back to the leader and try to see if the leader can get other nodes to agree on that value. Is that clear? This is the first phase. Okay. Now, in the second phase, the leader is going to collect all of these values and do something. Okay? So if the leader gets a prepare OK from a majority, not all, a majority, then you are going to first pick a value from whatever was, whatever came back. Okay? If so you can use any of the techniques. So you can say, what did all of them propose? You can say, pick the highest proposal that any node has sent back to you from what they had heard, and pick that value. And so V is the non-empty value from the highest proposal that some node has already seen in the system. If everybody has said null, then you can pick any value and propose that back, because nobody has proposing any value, so you get to pick something. Okay, but if somebody has seen a value and has sent that back to you, okay, then you pick the highest proposal ID from all the responses and pick that value and try to get everyone to agree on that. Okay? Now if you fail to get a majority, okay, you are going to delay and restart at this point. Okay? So assuming once you pick a value, you are going to send an accept with your proposal ID and this value back to all of the nodes. And then what does each node do upon receiving an accept and so on? If this proposal ID is less than some other proposal you've seen since the voting began, you're going to say reject. Somebody else sent me another proposal, you're no longer the highest proposal. Okay. Otherwise, you're going to say, okay, this is the highest proposal I've seen, a new value has been proposed, so I'm going to reset my proposal ID to N, that's the one that came, the value to the value that was sent, and this is the highest ID proposal I've seen. And you say okay. Okay, which means that you agree to whatever has been said here. So you say this is the most current proposal I've accepted from a leader. Okay, and you send back an accept message. Is that clear? Okay, so now phase three is if you get an accept okay from the majority, you say I have proposed this value, okay, and the majority have agreed to this value. So this is the value that I'm going to basically tell the learners that we agreed on. Okay, so you're going to send a decide with that value to the learner, and if you don't get an okay, then you're going to restart. Okay, so there is a small picture here that will show you what is happening. Okay, so here there are three nodes. Okay, this node is the leader, these two nodes are the acceptors. Initially, you start with some proposal zero, and then you basically have null. So you are going to send prepare messages. None of these nodes have seen anything yet, so they will basically have null messages or null values. So this is the first proposal they have seen. In this case, what they will do is they will set their value to be that proposal ID, and then they are going to say, okay, with saying I haven't seen anything yet, so I accept your proposal. And say okay and then send back null. At this point, everybody has said null, but they have said okay because they have not seen any higher ID proposal. So you can pick any value you want as the leader and say, this is the value I pick. Okay, no one has seen any value, so whatever value I pick, I can force them to agree. Okay, so you basically send those values out, okay, and then at this point, they are going to get an okay, and then you will send a decide message back to them. This is a very straightforward example where only one leader, nothing else was seen in the past and so on. Okay? So you get agreement quickly. Okay, now if it so happened that before this leader sent that message, some other leader had started a proposal and some they had recorded some values, but before reaching agreement the leader failed. Okay? Then when this leader says send me your value, this node will actually say that is the most recent proposal I've seen from some other leader or from this same leader in the past. So this is the value I received and send that back. Okay. So the idea is to get the nodes to agree on the value from the more highest ID proposal that anybody has seen in the system. Okay, so this is how the basic protocol would work. Okay. Now the subtlety in getting some agreement is, how do you pick these values? I mean, if you're a leader, if you pick some random value, that may not mean anything. So now that is dependent on the application, on what the leader can plug in. If nobody has seen it, the application can decide this is what the leader should pick, because the protocol allows the leader to propose any value. If you're doing locking, the leader can say, nobody knows the lock state, I am going to look at something and say this is the current lock state. You have things like that. So that is something you can plug in based on the application. The protocol doesn't depend on it. So long as that's the value that you're forcing everyone to accept, you will get agreement. So it has three phases. It's somewhat subtle in what it is doing, because although the protocol looks simple, lots of bad things can happen. You could have network partitions. If a network gets partitioned, then you will basically have some nodes that are not reachable. Okay, but one partition will hopefully have a majority, other partition will not. That partition can make progress. The one with the minority cannot make any progress. That's okay. So the majority can still make progress, because you only need a majority vote to make progress. Okay. You can have timeouts. Okay. Timeout is basically, I'm not hearing from the leader. Okay. You can say, if you have a timeout, you can declare yourself to be a leader and restart Paxos. Okay. You can unilaterally say, the leader is not responding, I'm not getting responses to this message. So I'm the new leader and you can restart. At this point, you may have multiple leaders. The timeout may just say leader is slow, not that it has failed. That's okay. It will still not have bad. The important thing is what happens if there are two leaders, because there's a timeout. Another leader started up and it is now trying to get the nodes to agree. Okay, what could happen? Okay. Can bad things happen? Okay, you can actually reason about this. So either one of these two scenarios will actually be true. If you have multiple leaders, both have started the Paxos protocols and their messages are interleaved, either one leader is not able to decide because its proposal gets overridden by the other one. It started a voting process. In the midst of it, the other one started and picked the higher proposal ID. Then when the first one tries to get everyone to agree, they will say, I already saw a higher proposal ID, so I can't possibly accept anything you tell me. Okay, so it will basically yield to the other leader at that point. Okay. Either that will happen, or what will happen is the two leaders are started, but their messages don't interleave. One gets them to agree, and then the next one goes next. Okay. So in this case, the first leader has already gotten them to agree. When the second leader actually tries to start this, they will all report the same value back and the same protocol ID. Okay. And as we said, if you actually get a value back, then you basically pick the highest value that you already received. So the second leader will be forced to pick the same value and broadcast it back. So you will not make them agree to something else. Once they have agreed to some value, okay, and sent it back, any subsequent leader that comes up will be forced to take that value and get everyone else to agree if they had not already reached agreement. Okay, so multiple leaders cannot cause any bad things to happen, because either one leader gets drowned out by another leader because it picked the higher proposal ID, so nothing can be done by the first leader. Okay. Or the first leader manages to get everyone to agree to their value before the second leader even starts, okay, or before it has finished the protocol. At that point, all the nodes actually announce the value that the first leader told them. And that's the value that the second leader has to accept, because if you get back a value, you just simply take the highest proposal ID value and tell everyone the same thing. So the outcome of that process will be the same as the outcome of the first lead. Okay, so you will basically be you won't disagree in this case. Okay. Leader failures are the same as two leaders. Okay. Because either you will have, in the leader failure, a timeout will occur, nothing has happened, you will start a new leader. Or you may have a leader that has started an election and somewhere in between it failed, another leader comes in. One of these two scenarios will be true. The second leader will pick a higher ID and drown out the first one, or if the leader crashed but it had agreed to a value, they will all report the same value. The leader will pick up from where the previous leader left off. Okay? Any questions on this? So that's basically what Paxos is. There are many implementation details that the protocol does not specify. Okay. So they are left to the implementation design. That's the basic protocol. Okay. Basically, the issues such as what value to pick if everyone tells you they are none. Not specified. Leader is allowed to pick what, propose any value it wants. Now that has to be chosen carefully so that the value it is proposing makes sense. You can't toss a coin and say let's do this, right? So that is dependent on the application to what is the right thing to do. So I will also have one paper that says how to implement Paxos in practice, where some of these unspecified things, what are the right decisions to make when you implement it in certain scenarios, and that may give you some notion of what to do. This is all material not from the book, but this is quite relevant to distributed systems. So I have actually looked at some papers to pull this together. Okay, so the only material I can offer back to read is actually the papers themselves. Okay, any questions on this? So I would suggest to go read it. I think that this is something that may be part of lab 3. Implement it to understand it. Okay. So we are done with fault tolerance in terms of getting agreement and so on, consensus. What I'll talk about are some final things that are related to recovery. Okay. Now keep in mind that a lot of our discussion has focused on the more complex aspects of fault tolerance. If you are Byzantine fault, what do you do? Okay, you need 3M plus 1 nodes, they all have to vote and agree on something. We talked about two-phase commit and three-phase commit, which is a process of getting agreement in the presence of fault. As I said, many systems don't even go that far. They simply only deal with crash-stop, fail-stop failures or crashes and use very simple techniques to recover. So a very common technique is to have two nodes that are replicas of one another. This could be referred to a hot spare. So also, let's say this is a web server. Okay. You have a primary and you have a secondary. Okay. All requests go to the primary. Primary is processing it. Anytime there is state change, the secondary is actually lockstep with the primary. It has the same state. Okay. So there is some internal protocol to ensure that these two are in the same state. And then all that this hot spare is doing is it is sending what are called heartbeat messages. Heartbeat messages are "Are you alive?" messages. They're like ping messages. So this node will periodically send "Are you alive?" "Are you alive?" And if so long as this first node is up, it will say yes. So there's nothing for the secondary to do. If at some point this node crashes, it's not Byzantine fault. It simply goes down. Then the heartbeat message will actually fail. You will not get an "Are you alive?" response. At that point, the hot spare will declare itself to be the primary, and basically all new requests will be sent here. So that's how many systems are actually architected. You have a replica which has the same state, which is kept in the same state as the primary, and is ready to take over any time the primary fails. Okay. There's no notion of agreement, none of that here, because you're dealing with a very simple type of failure, that the nodes crash and someone else will take over. Now, in order for this node to take over, it has to at least have some reasonable consistent state with respect to the primary. How that is maintained is up to the application. Every update here could be sent there, or there are many other techniques you could use. You could even use Paxos to ensure that these two are consistent. You don't have to, you can simply do very simple synchronous replication or some method of replicating state. That is what is done in practice. But there is what you need to realize is there are a lot more sophisticated schemes that are available to you as a system designer should you want to use it for some purpose. Okay. So, but what is done is not even going as far as some of the discussion we have had here, simply because it's complex, it's expensive. Okay. Implementing Paxos is not trivial, as you've seen. You have to deal with a lot of subtleties. Okay, and so on. So many systems choose not to do it at all. Now, that is as far as fault tolerance is concerned. The other side of fault tolerance is the recovery part. Okay. So we talked about what happens when a node goes down, how do you reach consensus, how do you take over, that's the way to take over. But now what happens when the node that failed comes back up, how do you recover? Okay. That's the part that basically I'll talk about the rest of a little bit. So when you recover, okay, the node that failed is out of sync with respect to the system. In the system, new requests have come in, and so the old node hasn't seen any of those updates. So somehow you need to be able to ensure it to sync up. Okay, that's the recovery part. So how do you do that is the question. Okay, one way to do that is to have the rest of the system periodically checkpoint its state. Okay? And then when the node comes back up, you load that checkpoint, saying here is what the system has, load this checkpoint, so now you are back in sync with all the nodes and then you are done. Okay? Or the node could come back up saying, I need the latest state, a process, one of the replicas will take an instantaneous checkpoint and say, here is my state, go load it and start from that point. We already saw techniques how to do checkpoint. If you remember the distributed snapshot that we talked about, you already saw how to do this. So you basically load the most recent checkpoint and you are done. You have to ensure that you want to have a consistent cut. This is what we talked about in distributed snapshot. So you have a consistent state you are giving to the replica. Otherwise you will be inconsistent. So you already did all this coordinated checkpoint. Another way to recover is not take checkpoint, but is use what is called logging. Right? This is widely used in databases and practically all file systems that you have today. Right? So what happens in databases is, in addition to having queries making or transaction making updates to the actual database, you keep a log saying what are all the requests I've received, what did that request do. Either you keep the entire query or you say these records were updated, these records were deleted. So you keep a log of all of the operations. Okay. So now when the failed node comes back up, the node will ask the one of the replica saying, what are all the operations you have seen till time t when I crash? Okay. You simply send the log over to the replica saying, go and replay this log. Okay. These are all the operations I performed after you crashed. So if you perform the same operation, the two states will be back in sync. Okay, so this is basically what is done in databases. This is called rolling forward. Okay? Remember when I talked about logs last time, we talked about rollback. We said you can undo an operation. Okay? Logs can also be used for roll forward, not just roll back. When a failed node comes back up, you send it all the operations that some other nodes performed since the failure. It simply replays them forward. And now it has actually performed all of those operations as well. So logs are used to do exactly that, rolls forward. Okay, same thing is done in file systems. In file systems, what you do is, you are actually modern file systems like ext3, ext4, JFS, they actually keep a log of all the write requests that are going to the file system. Okay. If the OS crashes, okay, the file system may be left in an inconsistent state, because there may be some data cached in memory or some such thing. So what you do is you use the log to recover it to a consistent state, because you have all the operations, you roll it forward and then you build. So what that also means is operations have always been returned to a log, even if you haven't actually returned it to an actual disk. Yeah, so you need to have the log in stable storage, otherwise none of this will work. You can't keep the log in memory. Yeah, that defeats the whole purpose of having the log. So logging is a very common mechanism for recovery. It's widely used. Databases use it, file systems use it, many other systems use it as well. Okay. So this is the flip side of fault tolerance, what to do when a node comes back up. Okay. So you can either use a checkpoint, load it, you can use logging, use it. You can also use a combination of the two. Okay. You can take periodic checkpoints. Okay. Let's say checkpoints are expensive, so you take them once a day or once an hour. And after the previous checkpoint, you keep a log of all of the requests you have seen after the previous checkpoint. So what you would then do is you would load the most recent checkpoint and replay the log from that point on. So you are actually rolling forward not to the checkpoint but to the current state. Okay. So this is going to combine checkpointing, which is expensive, with request logging or message logging, which is cheap. Okay. So do the expensive operation every once in a while. That gives you the full state at that point in time. And then use a log from that point on to roll forward. So this technique is also used in databases sometimes. You take the last backup of your database, which is a full checkpoint. Okay, so let's say you do nightly backups. Every day at midnight you take a backup of your database. So if your database crashes or needs to be restored, you will actually take the last backup. Okay? But that only gives you the state of the database after the last backup, let's say midnight, the database may have changed since that point on. So then you take the log from the previous backup and then you basically replay that. That allows you to bring it to wherever it was before the crash, not just the previous backup. Okay. So same ideas are used in real system to combine checkpoints or backups with logging. And you can use only one or the other always, or you can combine the two also for efficient recovery. Okay. So that is all I have. We are done with the fault tolerance. We'll start a new topic next time. So I'm going to end a few minutes early. If you have questions, you can ask. And for those of you who are actually part of the special projects, you can go up and talk.